Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Breaking news, special announcement, fellow Ridiculous Historians. It's your pals, super producer Max and Noel, and I'm Ben. We are doing something a little bit different this week, and we wanted to give you a heads up that this week's episodes are, there's something special. They might not be for everyone.
NSFW, NSFK, just unsafe. No, actually, I mean, they're safe. You know, sex is a thing that people, that's existed throughout history, throughout the species, you know? I mean, how else would we have continued to exist and thrive on this planet if it weren't for the sexy private times? And we go into that in detail in today's episode. You might hear Ben and I say some things that you're not used to hearing us say, because we join Diana and Eli of Ridiculous Romance in discussing the history of sex, not just sex, but sex toys, implements used not only for procreation, but for pleasure.
Yeah, well said. And I don't know about everybody else, but I definitely learned some things, and we enjoyed this episode so much. This two-part episode with Ridiculous Romance, that we wanted to put it directly on our feed. And we got Diana and Eli's permission. So they're great with it. But this is also a great way for you to get a taste of what you can encounter on Ridiculous Romance. It's not always, I feel like they want us to say this, Noel, it's not always about sex toys, but come for the puns and then check out their fantastic show as well, because it legit is hilarious.
And then seriously, this is probably on par with, I know when we do stuff with Jack and Miles, we kind of allow ourselves to untuck our shirts a little bit, let our hair down, our hairs. This one kind of takes that to the next level, I would say. So more on par with the George Carlin episode that we did, where there was about a list of blue words that were banned in broadcasting. This is kind of like that. So definitely not a co-listening experience unless it's, you know, you and your lover. That would be good.
So without further ado, let's dive into the history of sex toys.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I know, right?
I, too, am very excited and enthused.
So yeah,
we can tell.
I'm sorry.
Part of the conversation today.
Yes. We woke these guys up at 3 a.m. and told them they had to come jump on the show.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting.
And I was like, can I bring clothes with me? I didn't get an answer. but I found a t-shirt. So nice. I'm just not going to stand up while we record out of respect for everyone.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yes, thank you.
But I know that we were massively excited. First off, big, big fans of Ridiculous Romance.
Massively.
Yes. Massively excited. Positively vibrating with pleasure because
wow.
this is a show. One thing we love about Ridiculous Romance is your ability to explore things in a way that we often don't in Ridiculous History. Wouldn't you agree, Noel?
Explore.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah, no, definitely.
Get used to that in this episode.
I know. This is going to be a journey, a voyage of self-discovery. Yeah, I mean, we try to keep it PG-13. And honestly, like, there is no reason that the history of sex toys can't be PG-13. I mean, it's history. These are things. These are artifacts.
Yeah.
These are historic relics, sometimes sacred in many cases.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so true.
The history itself, definitely PG-13. Us talking about it, we'll
maybe
see.
Maybe not.
I love it, though. Yeah, this is us. This is like me and Ben's chance to really let it all hang out.
It's true.
Yeah,
we got to take you guys off the leash, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, wait, what do we... Is this... I trust you guys. Diana, Eli, is this a... episode where we need a safe word, or where are we at with that?
You know, a safe word is always a good idea.
I think so.
If you ever feel uncomfortable, definitely just, scream at the top of your lungs.
Harder. Or, that'll be our safe word. Right.
Harder. Okay.
Harder is a great safe word.
No potential for misunderstanding there.
I always just prefer, and I think we've mentioned it on the show before, that I just think the ultimate safe word is just
stop.
Safe word.
Safe word. Yeah. Why would you
why
need
just, why would you say
like
anything
but
safe word?
Or something when you're like, look, safe word, it says it all. It's safe word, you're done. I'm done.
I'm not going to accidentally say safe word in passion in the moment if
so
I don't
true.
Mean it.
Unlike pineapples, which comes up a lot.
Well, yeah.
Kindly stop ramrodding me.
Yes.
Sorry, the safe word must be submitted in writing, in triplicate. This is a question that I think is on both my mind and Noel's. What are some of the, like, you guys have gone into some really... it's at times controversial territory for a lot of people.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think you always approach from such an empathetic human angle is the idea of people's sexual explorations, right? I think because we call it Ridiculous Romance, and you've had stories that are almost entirely just the romance, right? But today, when you all came to us with this idea of sex toys, I can't speak for you, Noel, I knew they were ancient because people have been into this for a long time, but I don't think I grasped. I don't think I understood how intertwined with society, past, present, and future these things have been. And is it true? Like, are we at a, did we just as a society get out of a period where these things were taboo? I have so many questions.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially dildos particularly were vilified at at one point in history. They were very, very common and awesome and everybody loved them. And then they were like, wait, do you think my wife will like this dildo better than me? And then they kind of fell out of favor with the gentleman.
What am I going to do? Learn how to be a better lover? That's malarkey.
It's remarkable how frequently male insecurity shapes history.
Isn't it? So remarkable.
Yeah.
So remarkable. Almost too much remarkable. I also did learn, too, that because it allowed gay men, dildos allowed gay men to have sex without, without actually putting their own body parts in each other. They were able to have sex when they had HIV. And so they became synonymous with having HIV for a little while as well. If you had a dildo,
yikes.
It meant you were like had a deadly disease.
Wow.
Which is very weird. But obviously that changed.
What a weird leap to
make. I know, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, they were trying real hard to make everyone very scared of gay people.
That's true.
During that period. So I think they were trying anything.
Yep.
They were trying anything that would stick. Speaking of sticks.
Yeah, early on, though, I mean, like, the attitude towards sex was pretty laissez-faire. Like,
Definitely.
I mean, in the earliest days. And then it went through the kind of puritanical phase and then sort of has come full circle in the modern day.
Yeah.
I know we're going to get there, but why don't we take it back to, like,
antiquity and like the discovery of the first mystical dildo of the gods.
Well, yeah, we have been digging up dildos for a very long time.
Right.
They think the first one.
Humans, not us personally.
Yeah, I was going to save that question.
We have been personally.
We've only been digging up dildos for a couple months, but humans have been doing it.
In your backyard. It's weird.
Yeah. It's artistic.
I have no idea how they got back.
It was the oldest house on the street, they tell us.
That's
so
true. There was nothing but farmland.
The oldest house here on Dildo Ave.
Everyone would hide their dildos in our backyard. Human beings have been digging up dildos for a very long time. Uh-huh. They think they found the very first dildo in a cave in Germany that dates back to the Ice Age.
Oh,
so 28,000 years ago. And it's made of chalk.
Ooh, of chalk?
Well, I guess you got to stay warm, but geez.
It feels dry, though, doesn't it? Like something like that. Why would you want to put...
But you
chafy, yeah, something. No, but I mean, I guess you were real desperate in the Ice Ages.
But you could really leave your mark.
Chalk it up. Chalk it up to a lack of supplies.
I don't know. What couldn't they just have fashioned one out of like a block of ice? Just kind of make it like smooth. I guess it would melt, but it would take a while.
Really, do you want to put a block of ice like inside your butt? Because I can tell I would not like
maybe,
that.
It could be interesting. Who knows? I mean, it's refreshing.
It was the Ice Age. They were very used to that feeling, right?
Right. They're like, we're always cold. You know? Whatever.
Isn't there another old one that was discovered, I believe, somewhere in like Syria, that was like made of stone? There were like stone ones as well.
Stone ones, ivory, jade, probably bones, I imagine. I feel like that's an obvious one to make a dildo out of a bone.
Sure.
And if you look up prehistoric dildos, they have a wide variety of sizes and girths and different foreskin options.
Oh,
they even came with tattoos or little illustrations carved in them. So I love that there was some art.
They were like branded.
They were branded. They were like, this is Og's dildo.
Well, they probably had a close personal relationship, you know, at some point. I assume that even in more collectivist early societies, there were still things that were considered kind of like your personal property. Like, hey, this
like a toothbrush, you know,
or like an amulet, you know, or your butt plug or your dildo.
Yeah.
Right.
By the way, I made a mistake. I said Syria just kind of off the top of my head. It was Germany, I believe, where they found these collections of siltstone.
Germany.
Some of these were like monogrammed.
Germany, the early forefront. Of this technology.
Makes sense, exactly. Of anywhere in the world, where would you look for a dildo but Germany?
I've been saying that. You listen to our show. That's awesome. So so there's another thing. You know, Diana, you found this in your research, and it's something that really stood out to me, because you think a lot about, not to get too in the weeds, but you think a lot about material science, to put it in the lamest way possible. Like, it makes sense that there would be something like a smooth stone or ivory or bone or even wood. That would make sense and probably have less of a risk of injury or irritation. But what's up with the incredibly silly name, the Olis Boy? B-O-I. Olis Boy.
Olis Boy.
Here comes that Olis Boy.
It's your boy, Olis Boy.
We're breaking up. I don't need you. I have Olis Boy, and he's more of a man than you'll ever be.
pretty good branding. What's the deal with this? This dates back to ancient Greece, I believe, and then carried over to some other adjacent cultures.
Oh, yeah. They were stuffed phalluses, and they were made of polished leather. And I guess apparently sometimes you would even find the stone ones with like a leather sheath, so they would be warmer and softer when you
put
them up in there.
Okay. Sure.
So that was smart. I feel like they were really thinking about comfort at some point. And they were like, you know, while we're making coats and shoes, let's go ahead, set some aside.
Somebody said,
ladies,
this siltstone just isn't doing it for me.
Something about it.
A lot of roughage.
Something about it.
And chalk didn't work.
Chafy
What's
too.
Next?
Yeah.
I think it was big leather.
Well, speaking of chafe, the ancient Greeks would also use olive oil as a lubricant.
Oh.
So,
all right. Okay.
There goes your chafing problem. You just get that bad Olis Boy dipped in some olive oil.
Surely that enters into the etymology of the word, right? Does that Olis Boy referencing oil. I wonder. I mean, just, I don't know. I always do this where I see two vaguely similar words and I'm like, they must be related. There's no way they're not. But it is a pretty interesting coincidence because I believe this is the first version of this that was called this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other cultures
that
used that term as well. It makes me think of, have you guys ever seen the movie Caligula?
Yep.
No.
You know, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it's a lot. It was produced by the publisher of Penthouse, and they wanted it to be like full frontal orgiastic raunch city. But it's also like, you know, a really expensive, you know, period movie with Malcolm McDowell playing the titular psychopath emperor of Rome. And there's a scene where he uses olive oil to lube up his fist.
Do
a thing.
I've got the etymology because I was thinking of this as well. And, you know, English being such a language of the lazy and plagiaristic people of the world, we end up with a lot of things that may seem like they are falsely related. But according to this, olus boy, which is the funny one, is the plural of olibos, which is ancient Greek for to slip. To glide, you know, like that slip and slide commercial from the 80s.
Right. You slip, you slide, you take a jump and take a dive.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was, I was like, what? And then, oh.
All right. Eli, you and I are the olds in this conversation. Whereas,
as usual.
Yeah. Where I believe olive is unrelated etymologically, but.
Dang it. Well, foiled again.
By the it's funny again. If it was by called facts. Olive Boy. It was my olive boy.
My
olive oil
exactly.
boy.
Exactly. Like a Game Boy. This is like, my olive boy.
I'm going to go retire to be with my olive boy tonight.
Now, there's another interesting thing here when we're talking about the cyclical ups and downs of sex positivity, for lack of a better word, throughout human history. One thing that surprised me in the research here is that the Greek men, to your point about male insecurity, Eli, the Greek men who would go off to fight in wars were actually on board with giving an olus boy to their partner. Mm-hmm, is that correct?
Yeah. They thought that if women were left too long without an injection of sperm in them at some point, they would eventually get hysteria or something called a wandering uterus.
Oh, yeah, we've heard about that.
Which I know, it's a tough time around the house when my uterus jumps out and starts taking walks.
It starts wandering around
by itself.
You know, we always get calls from the neighbors.
Yeah. Like, your uterus is loose again. You know?
Where you at, little buddy? Yeah. Oh, my God.
We just need a higher fence, I keep saying.
I thought I felt a little
it's
lighter
just trying
today.
To find itself, you know? It's just trying to understand who it really is.
It's just like, what am I doing here?
Those things can jump.
Yeah, I got to say, this concept though of like leaving the women with a dildo so that they wouldn't, you know, their uteruses wouldn't wander, it gives a whole new meaning to the phrase left to their own devices.
Also it's like we have to inoculate you with sperm or else you will go insane,
which is so funny. And that, and I mean, it's noted here of course that hysteria and sex toys had a very long historical link, mostly for women. You know, doctors would do a pelvic massage for women that would result in a paroxysm. And I was supposed to cure them of hysteria. And I bet a lot of women were like, yeah, I feel so hysterical today. I don't know. I better go to the doctor. Hey, doc, you mind showing me how I could do this maybe at home for myself when a hysteria just comes on?
Put myself out of it.
Randomly. Right. He's like, no, I think you need a professional.
Mm-hmm. Was this kind of like a slow shift? Because it seems like at first these sex toys are purely meant for kind of, you know, the most hedonistic of pleasures. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to be more functional where it's like, I am the man. I you know, you are my property and I'm going to give you this as a stand in for me while I'm away. But then it kind of started moving more towards like being a medical device. Right. Or maybe we're not quite there yet, but.
Yeah, I think vibrators more specifically were marketed as medical devices, and dildos were not. So I think that's why dildos actually had more controversy on them than vibrators ever did.
Because
vibrators never really had. Yeah, vibrators never really seemed to be a problem for people. They were like, cool, whatever, get your steam-powered thing and have at it. But like, but it was like a medical thing because ladies are so crazy. They have to have something, right. I guess. But with dildos, it was more about like actual penetration and men could use them and, you know, lesbians use them and stuff. So it became like more of a
controversial. I guess I could see that, you know, if you've got something that vibrates, then the men, you know, well, I can't do that. So at least that's a different device. But if it's just a dildo, I've got a perfectly good dick right here. What's the problem?
You want a dick in you? I can make that happen.
Yeah. I can see them getting a little more aggravated about the dildos.
Maybe so, yeah.
This is a great spot for a break, so we'll be right back.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Welcome back, everyone.
So there's another question that I had that was a very, practical question. Like, obviously, a chalk, like a dildo devised of chalk, it sounds like it's what the person had to work with at the time. But when you're thinking about people in the natural world, where there's not nearly as much technology as there is today in 2022, as we record this, wouldn't the natural world already have some kind of like phallic thing you could mess with? Like, I don't know. I'm going to make the laziest choices. Like, I was, no, we're not going to tell that story. Like,
oh, but no. Why?
Okay, I'll say it. So I was in a grocery store during the height of the lockdown, only go out for necessities, whatever, be masked up and everything. And I hadn't been out in public in a while. And the entire, I think I mentioned this to you guys off air, the entire grocery store was filled with a weirdly unnecessary sexual tension because people hadn't seen each other in a while. Everybody's got an aura of mystery because, you know, 2/3 of their face is covered. And I was in the produce aisle and this there was a person there, and I can tell you much more about them, who saw me like selecting cucumbers for some stuff I was going to cook. and were staring at me hard to the point where I just put down the cucumbers and thought, I'm going to cook something else because this this person is reading this more into this situation than, you know, my lame ass salad or whatever. And I think of that, you know, we like it's a trope in so much Western erotica as well. Like, ooh, watch this person eat fruit or whatever. Mm-hmm, so did that play a role in like the history of sex toys?
Most definitely. There are like ancient texts like Arabian Nights that talk about fruit and vegetables and just any penis shaped object. But the best one I saw was from this Ming Dynasty writer, Tao Tsung Yi. And, you know, we don't speak Cantonese, but we try. Circa 1360, he wrote about something called the Cantonese groin, which was a root sufficiently penis-shaped to be used as a dildo, mostly by peasant women in like the country, rural areas.
Oh.
And interestingly, it was also called an olispos. So they probably got that from ancient Greece, I imagine.
I would, yeah.
The Silk Road was crazy.
Such a similar name. Yeah, right? Such a similar name it must have been.
The Silky and Road.
The legend of this Cantonese groin is, quote, in the pastures of the Tartars, wild horses often copulate with dragons. Drops of the semen will fall down and enter the earth, and after some time put forth shoots resembling bamboo sprouts of pointed shape and covered with small scales close together like the teeth of a comb and with a network of veins, making them very similar to the male member.
Okay.
Do you guys have teeth of a comb on your dick?
Sounds like a
comb teeth.
It's illegal for you to ask me that.
No. Well, to be fair, I mean, not to get too, you know, anatomically correct here, but why not?
Sure.
There is a seam, you know, on the bottom of a penis that is vaguely comb-like, or it's like a ridge kind of thing.
That's true.
It's a little zigzaggy kind of vibe. Maybe that's what they were referring to.
A lot of these, like,
put, you know, but yeah, the veiny part is always just, you know, I
know,
instantly
always
think of a Snickers bar.
Sometimes I get these
time.
Sweet potatoes at
every
the grocery store
time.
That have all these veins up along the side of them. It's very,
like, what
very
are
upsetting.
You trying to say sweet potato. That's a very sweet potato.
Anyway, the produce section in general, you just got
it's a minefield,
I even
man.
Wonder, Ben.
Don't go when you're
feeling
lusty.
When you skip cucumbers, where do you go? Because almost everything.
Well, it's so funny. The emoji is eggplant, which is the one I would probably not turn to in a crisis. And actually, another Ming writer named Li Yu wrote a theatrical play about a lesbian couple who use a double olispos. So they had double-sided dildos, like as far back as the 1300s. And this was a stick made of wood or ivory with two silk bands attached to the middle. I guess you could, like, pull on it.
Yeah, well, you need a grip, right? Yeah,
something to grip on. That makes sense.
I like so. I'm assuming I haven't seen this play.
I have not.
You have.
I don't think it's been mounted in a while.
Hasn't been mounted.
So is it double sided?
I think so.
Like double scene in Requiem
two heads
for a Dream.
To it, yeah,
like,
I think so. So that they could. They were saying in this book about the Ming writers that female homosexuality was very common and considered to be a fine, normal thing. No problem. Ladies have at. But male homosexuality was very frowned upon at the same time, which is so interesting to me, the gendered feelings about homosexuality.
It's interesting because there was also, especially in the upper class, there was some pretty distinct, sharp lines around gender division, right? So you could end up being, you know, someone of noble birth, and you're not gonna meet a lot of dudes who are not, you know, either working for you or your relatives. So maybe
how far historically is this after ancient Greek and ancient
this
Roman?
Is the 1300s, period. You said?
It's a long time.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you know, in those days, the Greek
opposite.
And Roman, I mean, it was like almost like. Like cool, not cool
right,
to not
yeah.
be you're... bi or bi curious or have like a stable.
So
of
long
young
as
boys
you weren't the
disposal,
one being
you
know? Penetrated, that
That's
was
right.
the line.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you had to be a top.
Yeah,
tops only, which is so funny because if everyone was a top, then where were they putting it?
Uh-huh. And by the way, guys, can we just be? What's a power bottom? Somebody explain to me what a power bottom
anybody?
Is.
Anybody?
Have you not seen
Always Sunny
for
this one
in Philadelphia?
Right,
they have a great explanation.
Power bottom.
Okay, I'll just Google it.
Maybe some ridiculous romantics.
Okay. We'll get an answering machine on a later episode. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it wasn't just vegetables and fruit that people used. Okay. Speaking of ancient Greece, in a book called The Joy of Sexus, Love, Lust, Love, and Longing in the Ancient World by Vicky Leon, breadstick dildos were a common thing.
Wow. Were they bottomless?
Yeah. Sorry. No, they all found a bottom, I think. Yeah.
Man, you win.
I don't think any of us.
Absolute super
I think we
villain.
All win in this one. Okay, so first off, I don't want to shout to Larry David. But the crumbs, right? Like crumbs.
This is my first question.
Exactly. Except, plus, I guess you have to have enough bread that you would let one sit by, get stale enough to do the job.
Plus, I'm thinking you bust out the olive oil. And there's a loaf of bread. I'm not going to do anything but eat it immediately. It's going to be gone.
A little balsamic vinegar.
Thank you.
A little salt.
Crack some black pepper in there. Yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Food is just going to come before sex for me.
Also, I have a real, not phobia, but I'm just sort of squigged out a little bit by incorporating foodstuffs into sex stuffs.
Same.
I just don't think the twain should meet. Like, I don't even like sexy strawberry use. That's just, no, it just gives me the willies. Don't care for it.
It's like inviting ants to hang out in your bedroom. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And stickiness. Right. There's already going to be stickiness eventually anyway, but that's how you know it's over. You don't want stickiness in advance of the ultimate stickiness.
That's how you know we're done. Man. I also don't like the idea of putting yeast anywhere near your vagina.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a thing, right?
Problems, yeah. You know? Maybe we don't need to be adding to the issues down there.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently this happened at an ancient bakery, quote, a gal with time on her hands started fooling around with bread dough.
is that a euphemism for like a loose woman?
I know,
a gal with
time on her hands.
Right.
While lasciviously daydreaming, she created an Olus Bocalix, the breadstick dildo, the sex industry's first green product.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Very important to be sustainable in our sex toy exploration.
I'm sure that was her primary concern. And she
Absolutely.
Was thinking thousands of years
about
from
pollution.
Now. Yeah. People are going to know.
Like, I don't want plastic waste.
I'm on to something. You guys are calling me weird, but just wait.
Just... One day, we're going to want to get power from the sun.
So, yeah, this is fascinating because it sounds like it caught on and became kind of a cottage industry, at least in ancient Athens.
Yeah,
there was a note from that interview that Leon did with the Huffington Post, where she answered a question that I was a little too hesitant to ask because I'm one of the more immature people in today's conversation. What happens to the bread after? Did anyone eat it?
Yes.
You sell it for half price, obviously.
Or you sell it for three
more?
Times the price.
Okay.
What?
Oh, on OnlyFans, you could probably sell it for a lot of money.
Some weird Greek guy out there is like, I'm so ready to eat that bread once you're done.
People are always selling their used underwear and
there's someone for
all kinds
something.
Of crazy shit.
You know? That's the thing. There's always
What did she say?
Oh,
did they eat it?
Leon said these breadsticks were, these Olus Bocalix, excuse me, were custom made to fit and, quote, even nutritious should the need arise.
Should a different need arise?
Yeah.
It's sort of like an edible
like a bread
spoon
bowl.
You might get at a
yeah,
fancy
like a
ice cream parlor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Functional and edible.
Mm-hmm. Nutritious, though?
Well, bread.
That's my question.
I mean,
that's a very broad term, you know.
Maybe it's like
it
a multigrain.
Probably has some extra vitamins and minerals.
Well, there you go.
It's like a multigrain, so there was some kind of friction.
Oh yeah,
involved,
sure.
You know,
with or without rye seeds,
Dr. Ruth is probably the source.
I'm gonna go with. Well, it depends. Do you want it ribbed for her pleasure? Hey. Maybe that's what the rides. Yeah, the rye
seeds.
There you go. Accomplish.
Yeah, apparently there's a reference to using dildos in the play Lysistrata, which is about women who go on a sex strike
right.
to stop a war.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely, right. I wonder if they ever used baguettes in like a, I kind of want to do a production now. They're like, well, I got, we're all set over here.
Well, the war is going terribly, but our grain industry is just dominating.
Time for a teeny weeny commercial break. We will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome back to the show, everybody.
Okay, I'll stop going back to the weird idea that people have to have, quote, sperm injections to not go crazy, because there's there's no sperm involved, obviously, right? With I'm not a baker, but okay, yeah, just checking.
I hope not.
No, but I suppose if you made like an eclair, you know, there might be something there, or a cannoli.
Oh my god.
Oh boy.
That's my nickname.
I said it was cream filled. I didn't tell you what kind of cream. Oh.
But I did tell Sorry you no refunds, and you're welcome.
Yes. So, that's right.
So but I did say.
So we're looking. I think it's safe to say, though, like what we're already seeing is a long established pattern of people. Honestly, people taking some agency for themselves, and people saying, yeah, I don't necessarily need another person and all that baggage that comes with it if I already know what I want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is a trend that continues. I got to say, spoiler alert for everybody listening, I am so excited to get to some poetry in a second, because I'm like emotionally 9 years old. But I think we've got maybe just another thing to add in here beforehand, which is we've also established past the world of like, so past the ancient world, when we're talking about a lot of this stuff, we're talking about people who are probably considered to be people of means. I mean, history itself, as we know it, is kind of a inherently a history of the literate class, because they're the ones who could write. So I guess what I'm asking, I'm not sure how to phrase this. What were rich people doing at this point? Like,
they weren't using bread.
Diddling themselves senseless. Yeah, right.
That's what the servants were for.
True. No, but you're so right. They I don't think they used as many root vegetables and stuff because they had money to pay for nice things.
Of course.
And by the time of the Renaissance, rich folks had dildos custom made from silver and ivory and gold and other like precious materials. So they had like, I mean, very valuable sex toys in their possession and probably beautifully decorated. don't you think?
Oh, I would think that, yeah, because you're showing them off to the neighbors,
gotta
right?
Gotta be. There's gotta be like a nice shelf in your bedroom, and you're like, take your pick.
This one is adorned with garnets.
I'm a lady of bless.
There's a certain element of keeping up with the Joneses.
Of
you know,
course.
The sex toys.
Well, let us adjourn to my dildoarium.
I think we've really skipped this period in history already, but I just wanted to mention something that I ran across in terms of like what the rich were doing. There is a rumor, I think it's backed up with actual findings, archaeological findings, but apparently Cleopatra would use like a papyrus box full of live bees the first analog, fully analog.
I saw a hollow gourd that she filled with bees, and that was the first.
Okay.
Legend says that was the first vibrator, which I have never wanted to get off enough to put live bees anywhere close to my body. But
what if they escape?
Okay. Seriously.
Way to high road people, Diana. Jeez.
I'm sorry. I'm better than you. Cleopatra, I'm better than you.
It was a different world. She had different things available to her.
Different things available.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Lost for words, Eli. If you feel a loss for words, I think you have perfect timing, my friend, because we're finally getting to a little bit of poetry. And what I love about this kind of poetry is that just like Beethoven's really dirty songs about farting and stuff, it proves that people back then were not really different from people today. In school we read about the highfalutin noble stuff. But I think sometimes we miss just how potty humor the human population is.
I kind of compare it to like, you think your dad didn't look at porn, but he definitely looked at porn.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And his father. His father before him.
and on. Yeah. Through the generation.
Pretty much. That's very true. I think that's an interesting thing about history is remembering that people loved to have sex. People loved to make jokes.
I remember listening
to a Noble Blood episode. That podcast, Noble Blood, is very good.
Great show.
And she was talking about reading some people. She's like, historians take this story really seriously as this like leader being a bitch to her, like whatever. But she's like, it's actually clearly a practical joke. If you look at it as a prank, it's just a funny thing she was doing with her court.
Yeah.
You have to remember that people did play jokes on each other back in the day. They weren't just fully stoic all the time. And, winning wars or whatever. speaking of etymology, I know you're an etymology fan, Noel, but the actual word, I do love etymology myself, but the word dildo came from our friends the Italians. Thank you.
thank you,
Italy. It came from the word diletto, meaning to delight.
Oh,
well, there it is.
That makes sense.
How
delightful.
Slide and glide and delight. The three things that describe
the double D sound is always just a fun. It's a delight to say dildo.
Dildo.
It sounds like a real silly, goofy thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
so and I've got to ask. So peek behind the curtain, folks. For years, I was trying to convince our bosses to let me do an etymology show. Write in and tell them we should. And that the four of us will do it. I'm volunteering everybody here. We need your help. But this reminds me, another word that came into English usage from Italian is dilettante. And I think it has the same ultimate root, right? To delight.
Oh, sure, yeah. Diletto, to delight. Yeah.
So my question is, even though now we call dilettante, you know, we call the definition a lover of the arts or whatever. did it mean dildo people in the beginning?
A lover of the dildos.
It's people who had way too many in their dildoarium or whatever. Right. Like, she has a whole other room, guys.
Why would I need
total
a dildo rack? I don't even have a dildo, let alone many, that would accommodate an entire rack.
We'll be adding another wing onto the palace this year.
Exactly.
But yeah, we have a really wonderful, hilarious body poem about the Italian influence here.
Right.
It was by John Wilmot, who was the second Earl of Rochester, and he was apparently well known for his lewd poetry that he would write. And we pulled out some select verses from kind of a long poem called Signor Dildo that he wrote.
That's Mr. Dildo.
Right.
Mr. Dildo. So yeah, I say let's head on down to Poetry Corner and hear Signor Dildo by John Wilmot.
You would take him at first for no person of note, because he appears in a plain leather coat. But when you his virtuous abilities know, you'll fall down and worship Signor Dildo.
My Lady Southisk, heaven prosper her fort, first clothed him in satin, then brought him to court. But his head in the circle he scarcely durst show, so modest a youth was Signor Dildo.
The Countess of Falmouth, of whom people tell her footmen wear shirts of a guinea an ell, might save that expense if she did but know how lusty a swinger is Signor Dildo.
Woo!
Swing. The pattern of virtue, Her Grace of Cleveland, has swallowed more pricks than the ocean has sand.
Little slant rhyme right there. Got to give him credit for that one.
Has the swallowed shade. More the pricks name dropping
than
in shade
the ocean
here.
Has sand. Yeah. Cleveland has sand. Yeah. But by rubbing and scrubbing, so wide does it grow. It is fit for just nothing but the Signora Dildo.
Our dainty fine duchesses have got a trick to dote on a fool for the sake of his prick. The fops were undone, did their graces but know the discretion and vigor of Signor Dildo.
This Signor is sound, safe, ready, and dumb as ever was candle, carrot, or thumb. Then away with these nasty devices and show how you rate the just merit of Signor Dildo.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
I want to point out just two things real quick. First, yeah. Dumb in that last, first great read, everybody.
Right.
Wait, three things.
No,
fantastic acting.
Second,
dumb in this sense most likely just means silence.
Yeah.
Silence.
But
yes,
it works.
Yes.
It works very well.
It works
well.
Either way.
Yeah. Yes. So congratulations.
A himbo is what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
a himbo. We're talking about a himbo.
Yeah. So I don't think we said this in the beginning because we were excited about talking about this off air. Diana, Eli, this is not the full poem. These are excerpts. You have it in the notes as select verses from his poem.
Yeah.
My question is, how long is this poem? Is he just like...
They're all so... Y'all. Yeah.
Pre-television, they're all pages,
Exactly. They had nothing else to do. So this shit went on for like, I think it was like 18 or 19 stanzas.
Amazing.
And he name dropped so many people. And I'm like, I hope they're real. Like, were they here listening? Like, are you trying to say that I have swallowed more pricks than the ocean has sand?
So he specifically name checks people?
Well, this is, I don't know if they're real people.
But even still, he's like.
I think so. I think I think he is at least referring
to. The Countess of Falmouth.
Because this happened a lot in aristocratic circles. They would write
it
stuff
was like
that
the
was
early
like
rap battles kind of
or roasty, yeah. Kind of like they would be writing stuff that's like, you know, they'd put a different name on it, but everybody knew who you meant.
Uh-huh.
You know, you meant that
the
slutty
sub-tweet.
Chick over there.
The
you know? Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So it was always like some shade.
Amazing.
Just trying to throw shade
total
on all
shade.
These ladies.
One thing I love about this style of poetry is it's so smug and self-satisfied.
It is.
Like, just like, I'm going to do the thing again, like, at the end of it, you know, it's just like, yeah.
Very arch.
And like, and the fact that there's, like, the fact that there's so many more stanzas to this that we left out just hammers that home even further.
Yeah.
Does
like,
it hammer
I
it?
Oh, it does. Right on the head. I am just so delightfully bawdy and hilarious. That's what this guy's saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was very proud of this poem, I'm sure. Very excited to share with all the ladies that he was talking about.
He's like, hey, I put you in my poem. Oh my God, thank you. Well, man, read it first. You should come to the show.
I also wonder if the Countess of Falmouth was like, oh, so I don't have to fuck my footman and give him nice stuff. I could just get me a little toy to put in the house.
this is where we see like a turn. So it's widely accepted, even though it might be a little edgy, right? This guy's doing insult comedy, tale as old as time, right?
Sure.
But as you guys have been telling us before, eventually there was a time where guys started to promote specifically started to associate, well, they ran a smear campaign against dildos, right? It's promiscuity, it's even VD. But at the same time, for the entire time, dudes had their own toys, right? And Eli, I'm gonna have to go hashtag no pun left behind because it's sincere. When you at the very top of the show said male insecurity, because it's been a long day for me, I thought you meant male hyphen IN space security. M-A-I-L. Yeah,
security.
I don't know what to do with that pun, but I don't want to leave it out in the cold.
Hang on to it.
There's a lot of male insecurity. Yeah, like a guard, guard who can't,
It'll come.
Ridiculous romantics, help us out. Just explain that pun to us. The pun
male
we made.
It's going to be great.
So this is fascinating, though, because we haven't talked about something that is apparently quite popular. I feel weird saying it. I feel like my mom's going to come back and find me if I say this. Cock rings?
Yep.
Oh, God, man!
But they're old too,
Dude, my favorite, I think one of my favorite Mr. Show sketches. Like a fake commercial.
Yes.
It's like cock ring warehouse. Any cock will do.
But they're like so bored. They're like, come on down to the cock ring warehouse. We have all the cock rings. New and used cock rings.
Vintage. Yeah, I like it.
I love that. That shit's hilarious. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
But yeah, they are actually pretty old school cock rings. They have been around for a long time. Partly, I guess, because of that male insecurity, because they're supposed to help you achieve or keep an erection for longer. So it's kind of part of, I guess, that where they're like, I need something to like make sure I'm giving her the goods.
Yeah.
Give you the edge. Literally. It's about edging, kind of. That's the term. Sort of keeping yourself. It's almost like a tantric thing where you're sort of like holding back. You know, you're trying to not, you know, climax in 2.5 seconds.
Right.
Trying to give it some time. There's a book called The Book of Kink, Sex Beyond the Missionary by Ava Christina. And it says that in the Jin and Song dynasties in China around AD 1200, they would make cock rings out of a goat's eyelid.
What?
All right, I'm out.
Because it's already a circle of skin. Uh-huh. And then they would leave the lashes on the
Like a feather tickle?
Oh, my
God.
Like
so it would be a little tickly for the ladies.
Can I just say,
involved.
The things we've done to goats on this show.
I know, right?
And even when we went on your show. Last time for Valentine's Day.
Goats we put through. Yeah, we can.
Was there some goat vivisection involved in one of those rituals that we talked about? No, I know what it was.
It was the goat skins. They would slap
the
people with bloody goat skins.
Slaughter the hell out of
We had a guy marry a goat in a recent episode.
That's right. We talked about that. We talked about that. So, but yeah, that we are putting goats through it.
Yeah.
Well, it's part of a long history, too, of looking to the natural world for things that are thought to in one way or another enhance sexual performance, right? And even that even exists today with the various different unproven or disproven stories that say, hey, you know what? This thing's an aphrodisiac. I know it sounds crazy, but just let this guy slap you with a goat skin a couple of times and then come back and thank me. Just come back and thank me.
Eat this entire goat's testicle whole.
Yeah.
It will imbue you with the power of the goat.
Why is it always the most disgusting, smelly, unappetizing things that are like, this will really turn you on?
Yeah, it's
because
never like...
sell them. They were like, otherwise it's trash. I've got to make it about sex or something.
They're never like, just do 10 push-ups a day, you know? Just,
well.
There's a lot. And they're like, no, I don't have time. It's going down in the next room. Just give me the goat eyelid.
Give me the goat cock ring now.
You're right, though. I love oysters, but they're obviously really unappetizing and disgusting
boogers
to
of
some
the
people.
Scene.
I think it was
they look
I think
so
it was
gross,
Hemingway said something like was
very brave was the man who first ate an oyster, you know.
Or very
but like
hungry.
That's a meant to be an aphrodisiac.
True, I've heard that.
Acquired taste for sure.
Yeah.
I just don't know about that. I don't know if I've eaten an oyster and been like, ooh. And I don't think so.
They say that about garlic too, but that's another one. I'm like, does anyone eat a bunch of garlic and go, yes, no, I can't wait to mash my mouth up against yours.
As soon as I smelled you across the room, I knew
it was time.
It was a Cloud Atlas moment. Jeez.
Oh, Lord.
Well, so, you know, I'm a big believer in being honest and transparent about learning, and I'm going to go out and say it. I don't care if I embarrass myself. I did not know that goat eyelash cock rings were a thing. I must have missed.
That's shameful, Ben.
I must have missed that day in PE, and I apologize to everyone.
It was a whole day of health class.
We kept nudging you, but you were sound asleep.
How would you fall asleep during that lesson?
Like,
of
ben,
all
this
lessons?
Is the good part.
So,
you stayed awake for the etymology, but not this.
So what we all this also makes me think of things that people have done. And this I do know about things people have done in pursuit of enhanced sexual pleasure, including what I would call minor surgery, because guys, we can say this as dudes, will do a lot of crazy stuff if they think it gives them just an edge, just a little edge.
That's so
true. I don't even think you have this covered there, but like, you know, I mean, the Prince Albert literally was created by Prince Albert, you know,
right.
It's, you know, it's obviously a piercing, through the urethra and out the bottom of the of the head. It's a terrifying prospect.
Sounds incredibly painful.
Not worth an edge to me.
But I guess it is for some. I don't know. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum.
No, 100%. But I, you know, these some of the ones that you found, Diane, I think are maybe a little more like impermanent.
Yes, fortunately, but still painful. I don't know.
It would seem
but yeah,
so.
There's this book called Woman, an Historical, Gynecological, and Anthropological Compendium from 1935. And it's by Hermann Heinrich Ploss, Max Bartels, and Paul Bartels. And they say that this goat eyelash cock ring thing may have originated in the Indonesian islands and not in China. So that's a little bit in dispute. And they also noted from various tribes worldwide, sex aids like inserting a brass wire into the penis or putting little gold and silver beads under its head.
All right.
And then binding it up with a bit of bird down to tickle the sex partner at the same time.
Okay, folks. I'm out.
You wouldn't put a silver ball in your penis for me?
No. No, I don't need to hesitate on that one. That's just a flat
no. Okay, that's fair. I wouldn't ask it of you, to be fair. But
thank you.
So that was an option that you could do. Again, I think that's a ribbed for her pleasure thing. It's trying to make your dick more special, I guess, or something.
I mean, sticking a brass wire, I guess that's for rigidity,
that, I
right?
guess,
we're thinking?
Like a,
so you can kind of bend it like into shapes splint? Like a paperclip animal?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Oh, like a paperclip animal?
I can see how that would be possible, but I'm having a tough time with the motivation. You know what I mean? Teach their own.
Right, exactly.
Again, teach their own.
With that.
Yes.
Ooh.
I don't know. There might be some people out there with very fascinating little giraffes they've built out of their dicks.
I guess I'll look at a gallery
I'm
of it,
out.
But not for long.
Well, I would think also then that aside from those kind of traditions, we already see the idea of wanting to be associated with wealth, like gold and silver, the beads. What about, did they ever move on from the goat eyelash thing? Like how much of history have I missed? I guess I'm asking. Was this like a thing that you knew about or like what?
No. I mean, definitely. I mean, I was aware that like, I think early condoms were made of sheepskin.
Right. Right.
But that's the degree to which I was aware of using animal flesh on your member. But then, you know, you get into, what was this? The Burmese bells. That's kind of the next level of this, right?
Yeah, this is another really interesting one. And this one could be placed either inside the vagina prior to sex or in the penis.
I've seen this for sale on Goop.
Yeah, it's very good for your vaginal health. But they were called exertion bell or Burmese bells. And this, again, we're in the Ming Dynasty. So this is a lot of ancient Chinese sex aids, I guess. And they were kind of copper or gold bell or ball shaped objects that contained the sperm of a mythical Burmese bird. And apparently you had to catch the sperm with like a fake woman made of straw. There's like a whole complicated process to getting this sperm. And the Qing scholar Chao Yi describes holding one of these in his hand, and he said, quote, "I found that as soon as it had become a little warm, it started to move on its own account, and a tiny sound emanated from it. As soon as I put it back on the table, the sound ceased."
Oh, God, I hope the sound was like... Oh.
Now that would be fun. It was like, I know what you about to do, baby.
Wow.
But that was the one, like the bees, where I was like, if something starts to jump around and make its own noise, I feel like I would not put it inside my body.
Yeah, I didn't go there, Ben. I was immediately just thought this sperm is haunted.
There's ghost a little sperm.
Ghost sperm inside this.
There's a ghost in there.
Oh, man.
Which some people would be into.
It's true. It's true.
I think we've done them on this very show.
Or we will.
Yeah, we will if we haven't, yeah.
Holy cow, I'm blushing. But also, you know, I learned a lot about my body, which is a temple, but also apparently a playground. It has been throughout history.
Yeah, I candidly learned some stuff that I can't unlearn. A lot of, I can't remember if we already got to this in part one. I think we did. A lot of stuff about goats.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with me.
Yeah, mental images that I can't unsee, but I don't want to. I'm forever changed by them, and I'm okay with that, you know?
What an experience. What a wild ride, Noel. And this is only part one. I've got to say, though, I can't wait until Thursday when we get part two out.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get it out there. Sorry to anyone who this topic wasn't for you. We'll make it up to you next week with some really, really vanilla content. We promise. Just kidding. We know there's no prudes in the squad. There's no prudes in the squad.
In the meantime, thanks to, of course, Vanilla Ice Cream. Thanks to our one and only super producer, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to Casey Pegram.
Thanks to Vanilla Ice.
Thanks to Vanilla Ice. Thanks to Millie Vanilli. Thanks to our own Millie Vanilli, the one man Millie Vanilli himself, Mr. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. What do you think about that street name? You know, they call him the one man Millie Vanilli.
Well, I mean, he does not play well with others, even if there's lip syncing involved. So that's on him, I would say. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed this bangin' bop that you're hearing in your ears right this very second. Thanks to Christopher Hasiotis and Eve Jeffcoats here in spirit. And most importantly, Ben, thanks to you for this opportunity to go on a raunchy ride together. It was a lot of fun. And there's more to come.
Yeah, big, big thanks, of course. We've said it several times, but can't say it enough. Big thanks to Eli and Diana Banks for making such a wonderful show. Big thanks to everybody throughout history who got horny enough to MacGyver an experience together for themselves. And of course, Noel, huge thanks to you, man.
Ah, you're too kind. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.